Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on December 18th, 2020 from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look back at the life of South Carolina politico Don Fowler. We talk with Russ McKinney about his life. Two prominent South Carolinians have contracted COVID-19 this week. We hear more from medical professionals about the state's vaccine rollout, and we have some rough economic data, including a jump in poverty, while Congress continues to fumble a COVID relief bill. Okay, we want to hear from y'all for our Christmas wind down next week. We want to hear how you're celebrating and how you're looking ahead to New Year's, what your resolutions are. Okay, you can tell us. Also, maybe what you've discovered about yourself this year or what you've accomplished. We've all accomplished some things and we've made it this far, so that's an accomplishment in itself. So tell us what's going on. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and a little bit about the holidays this year in review. Let us know. We want to know. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 4,512 confirmed deaths, and currently there are 247,361 confirmed cases being reported in all 46 counties as of December 18th at 4 p.m. And we have some more disturbing records. We set a new case record on Friday with 3,648 daily cases being reported. Our positivity rate had a new record at 25.9%. And so far, there are 1,460 patients with COVID-19 in hospitals. 315 patients are in intensive care, and 143 people are on ventilators. And on Thursday, America recorded its highest daily total of coronavirus deaths for the 12th day in a row. More than 3,600 Americans died in one day. And in a little brighter news, on Friday, Vice President Mike Pence got his first dose of the vaccine and said he didn't feel a thing. Now, we're still waiting on Dr. Anthony Fauci to get vaccinated here, but he says NIH will be getting doses soon, and he hopes to be vaccinated before his 80th birthday on Christmas Eve. Happy early birthday, Fauci. I mean, I want to look that good at 80. We're going to start off our politics section with a visit from the Russ McKinney of South Carolina Public Radio. Russ and I spoke Friday about the late Democratic political heavyweight Don Fowler, who died from leukemia at his home in Columbia Tuesday evening at the age of 85. Russ had known Don since high school, and he shares some stories and highlights of a career that included his time as a state Democratic Party chairman in 1971 to 1980, overseeing the Democratic National Convention in 1988, and leading the National Democratic Party from 1995 through 1997, and he also ran his own successful communications firm. I opened our discussion by asking Russ about what made Don Fowler such a presence.
Well, I think there are probably thousands of people across the country, in particular in this state, to probably feel that it was a privilege to know Don Fowler. He was simply a very unique individual, very outgoing person, always never met a stranger. Always interested in other people and what they were doing, and of course, always interested in politics and that sort of thing. So he literally impacted the lives of thousands, I would say, during his professional lifetime. I grew up in Spartanburg, as he did, and my first memory of Don Fowler was the star basketball player at Wofford College. And I actually remember slipping in the field house over there a couple of times and watching him play. And he was a tremendous ball player. And he took that same kind of, I think, zest for life and interest in life and competitive spirit into his professional life, and probably helped lead his success.
And then you also kept in contact with him over the years, and even was one of his guest lecturers for his class at University of South Carolina. Tell me about how maybe his approach to teaching, and especially in political science, a field that is very unique.
Well, Don was actually a true intellectual, and I think the teaching part of his life may have been what appealed to him most. But he was very open and accommodating to his students. And he was very, even though he was an active, ardent Democrat, he had many Republicans guest lecture his class. He traveled a lot with his business, so it was not unusual for him to bring in office holders, political consultants, politicians, friends, colleagues to lecture his class. And it became one of the most sought after classes, his class in American politics at USC over the years, especially by the political science students. And again, those students were from all across the political spectrum, just not students that thought they wanted to be interested in Democratic politics, Republicans as well. It was really a unique course over many, many, many years that Don offered at USC.
Yeah, I read some of the coverage about his death, and you heard from some of his students out there just really singing his praises. So it sounds like it was quite the class to take. I kind of wish I was around at USC to take that class for sure. But you really saw his outsized role on display, especially during this past Democratic presidential primary, when you had all the candidates coming through and somewhat kissing the ring. But, Don and Carol opened up their house to these candidates, to people to see these candidates coming through, because it was such a big field. Tell me your thoughts about that process and his role and maybe, always being there for these presidential primaries that play such a big role in the presidential process.
Yeah, that's something that kind of, I think, built over time. In the late 60s, early 70s, Don was the executive director of the state Democratic Party. And then later he was chairman of the Democratic Party. And for many of those years, he wore both hats. He was executive director and chairman. So he was the Democratic Party in South Carolina for, several decades. Also, as a member of representing South Carolina, as a member of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. So that put him in contact with national Democrats. Anybody that was interested in possibly seeking the Democratic nomination for president, and when South Carolina came up, one name came up with it, Don Fowler. You touched base with Don Fowler. Over the years, especially when he became more active as a chairman, for the DNC, he had to pull back a little bit as far as picking and choosing a candidate. But as you mentioned, one of those mandatory stops in the South Carolina Democratic presidential primary would be a function at Don and Carol's house. So it was a niche role that they assumed here for the last presidential cycles.
Yeah, and Jim Clyburn even mentioned how it was in Don's home in which he and his late wife, Emily, met Joe Biden. So it's quite interesting to see that kind of history and those crossroads and connections when we talk about politics in South Carolina. And even Clyburn called him the heart of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Former President Bill Clinton said he was a good man with a sharp mind and a big heart. Republican Governor Henry McMaster said Wednesday that Fowler was a true gentleman in an area where it's become the exception and no longer the rule. So really, Russ, kind of closing out there, really just a larger-than-life figure, someone that we don't see too often anymore these days.
Yeah, and I think that says a lot about the kind of the person that Don was. Not only, Governor McMaster, but former Republican governors David Beasley, Mark Sanford, also, chiming in with similar comments. And those are all accolades that if you knew Don Fowler and you worked with him in any capacity, business, politics, over the years, you certainly understand why they're being said.
Well, thank you very much, Russ. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks.
It's great talking with Russ and hearing about Don Fowler. He will be missed. Moving on, 2nd Congressional District Congressman Joe Wilson announced on Twitter Wednesday evening that he tested positive for COVID-19. Wilson said he has not experienced any symptoms and will be quarantining through the Christmas holiday. He was seen at the Electoral College meeting in Columbia on Monday, where he was not wearing a mask while posing for photos, according to the state. Also, First Lady Peggy McMaster has tested positive for COVID-19. The governor was tested Thursday and is negative, according to the governor's office. The First Lady is not experiencing any symptoms. The governor and First Lady tested negative on Monday, December 14th, prior to attending a White House Christmas event, and on Thursday, December 10th, prior to meeting with Vice President Mike Pence. The First Lady will isolate for the next 10 days and monitor for potential symptoms. Accordingly, Governor McMaster will follow official guidelines for close contacts and will quarantine for the recommended 7 days while being tested regularly. The governor will continue working from home until his quarantine period is over, wishing everyone speedy recoveries there. As we head out of our politics section, I wanted to include this interview I had with Furman de Brabander. He's a philosophy professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and we talked about his new book, Life After Privacy, Reclaiming Democracy in a Surveillance Society. We spoke on This Week in South Carolina, and I opened by asking him about where all this data is going and what we know about it.
They know a lot about us. We have no idea what they know about us, but they know a lot. And they know things that we can hardly even fathom, such as the example I discussed in my book where Target knew when customers were pregnant and in the second trimester of their pregnancy, no less. They know if you're creditworthy on the basis of whether you buy felt pads to keep your furniture from scuffing the floor. This is the kind of arcane esoteric knowledge they're looking for that they're skimming out of our data. And they're able to collect this data from a variety of angles. They know a lot, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Is there, is it known to us how much? I know you said we don't know how much goes on there, but are people, you know, seemingly okay with this? It seems like we are to an extent, but what are the feelings about this?
Well, that's where I go back and forth. I mean, the general impression is that people tend to say that they do not like it. And the word that comes up so often is that they find these kinds of invasions of privacy creepy. On the other hand, people also seem to be more than willing to take part because of the kind of conveniences that these privacy invasions offer. When Amazon knows so much about me, then the amount of services they can offer grows exponentially. And consumers, you know, our digital economy is extremely fast-paced. And in this fast-paced economy, people are very happy that that our digital spies know this about us because of the service they can provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely creepy when you can have Target, you know, knowing that, you know, if you buy, neonatal vitamins, that you're about to be pregnant, so we're going to start sending you coupons based on that. It inflames some people and, you know, cause some issues. But I'm guessing just because there's some big blow-ups in the news about certain events like this, it might get some traction, but it's still going on, and people don't seem to worry about it because, hey, I'm getting a coupon and I am pregnant.
Well, I've also noticed a kind of generational divide. You know, my generation older is really worried about these kinds of privacy invasions, but I wrote the book because of my conversations with students and younger generation who seem very much more nonchalant about this. They find this to be par for the course. And this is just a fact of life in the digital economy. You want to get stuff done, you have to share information, make your life an open book. And in point of fact, and I think rightfully so, the younger generation is quite resigned to this. This stuff is known about us. Our spies don't even need our data. They can find everything about us through what is called our metadata, which is the data of our data, where we make our phone calls, when we make them, not what we're saying, you know, not the content of our emails, but who they are to, what they look like, where we're buying stuff. This is perfectly sufficient for our spies to know a lot about us.
Catch that full interview Sunday morning at 11:30 on SCE TV or on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. And we'll be back with a new season of TWSC starting January 7th. We'll also have some more surprises in store for increasing SCE TV's news footprint that we'll announce in January, as well as a new podcast series. So some fun things await you in the new year, folks. South Carolina's economic recovery is cooling, following our first increase in the unemployment rate since the pandemic occurred. The rate ticked up slightly from 4.2% in October to 4.4% in November. That's because some 64,000 South Carolinians lost their job and another 62,000 are no longer looking for work. Dan Elsey, who is the executive director of the Department of Employment and Workforce, said in a statement that, quote, "It will take grit and tenacity to rebound fully, not only from employers continuing to find innovative ways to make their workplaces safe, but also for job seekers who are being challenged now more than ever to rethink employment options and unique career opportunities," quote. So to give you an idea of where we are in this recovery, jobs are down by some 65,000 since last November. As for initial jobless claims, they did drop from 5,100 at the end of November to 3,723 for the week ending December 5th. So you can just kind of see that November being just so brutal right there. Now, currently, 46,371 South Carolinians were receiving weekly benefits as of November 28th. And nationwide, the picture is not much better. The Associated Press reports that the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits rose again last week to 885,000, the highest weekly total since September, as a resurgence of coronavirus cases threatens the economy's recovery from its springtime collapse. The AP also says that the total number of people who are receiving traditional state unemployment benefits fell to 5.5 million from 5.8 million, and that figure is down sharply from its peak of nearly 23 million in May. And since we're talking about jobs, I want to share some comments from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell after the Federal Open Market Committee's two-day meeting this week. Here's 90 seconds of Powell.
The recovery has progressed more quickly than generally expected, and forecasts from FOMC participants for economic growth this year have been revised up since our September summary of economic projections. Even so, overall economic activity remains well below its level before the pandemic, and the path ahead remains highly uncertain. In the labor market, more than half of the 22 million jobs that were lost in March and April have been regained, as many people were able to return to work. As with overall economic activity, the pace of improvement in the labor market has moderated. Job growth slowed to 245,000 in November, and while the unemployment rate has continued to decline, it remains elevated at 6.7%. Participation in the labor market remains notably below pre-pandemic levels. Although there has been much progress in the labor market since the spring, we will not lose sight of the millions of Americans who remain out of work. Looking ahead, FOMC participants project the unemployment rate to continue to decline. The median projection is 5% at the end of next year and moves below 4% by 2023. The economic downturn has not fallen equally on all Americans, and those least able to shoulder the burden have been the hardest hit. In particular, the high level of joblessness has been especially severe for lower-wage workers in the service sector and for African Americans and Hispanics. The economic dislocation has upended many lives and created great uncertainty about the future.
Now, unemployed folks could see an additional $300 a week under the current COVID relief bill being hashed out in Congress, and there could also be $600 stimulus checks to most Americans. We'll see what makes it through, as we have been for how many months now have we been waiting? We're going to have a little tie into that in a moment. For some more troubling economic news, the Associated Press reports that U.S. retail sales fell a seasonally adjusted 1.1% in November, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce. It was the biggest drop in 7 months and a steeper decline than Wall Street analysts had expected. The report points to a weak start to the all-important holiday shopping season, which can usually account for a quarter or more of a retailer's annual sales. It is also another sign that the pandemic is slowing the U.S. economy as retailers face tighter restrictions and people stay away from stores. But how is this affecting small businesses? Well, famed investor and billionaire Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, gave a rare interview on CNBC this week. Buffett called upon Congress to act to help small businesses, saying, quote, "The boat is going down. They need help now," quote. Buffett's comments came as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce released its Small Business Index report with MetLife that found small businesses anticipate the worst of the pandemic is still ahead, and most say they need further government assistance to weather the storm. The current Small Business Index score is 52.9, which is a slight increase from 50.3 in the third quarter. Now, the new score of 52.9 remains substantially below findings before the pandemic struck, when the index was scoring at 71.7. So, whew, small businesses are feeling it. So some really depressing numbers there, and I know a lot of this can kind of keep getting to us, and a lot has been asked from all of us, but give what you can and support small businesses as much as you can. They obviously need it now more than ever, especially during this holiday shopping season. And to put a depressing bow on this depressing final business section of a depressing year, we look at poverty levels, which are still historically low, but are rising in a way unlike we've seen since the government started keeping track of rates 60 years ago. Researchers at the University of Chicago and the University of Notre Dame found that poverty has risen sharply in recent months as some of the benefits that were part of the government relief package have expired. Poverty rose by 2.4 percentage points from 9.3% in June to 11.7% in November, adding 7.8 million people to the ranks of the poor. Now, poverty has risen each month since June, even though the unemployment rate has fallen by 40%, from 11.1% to 6.7% over this period. Again, unemployment rates don't tell the whole story, folks. In this initial study, researchers found that the entire decline in poverty through June can be accounted for by the one-time stimulus checks the federal government issued, predominantly in April and May, and the expansion of unemployment insurance eligibility and benefits. In fact, in absence of these programs, poverty would have risen sharply. So, to recap, small businesses are bracing for the worst, state unemployment is ticking up, poverty has jumped nationwide by 8 million, Congress still hasn't done anything, and our surge is out of control. Pretty unbelievable that all this is happening and hasn't been mitigated since we knew it was going to surge again this year. And if you think this is the best we can do, I got news for you, baby. All right, let's look at a little bit more optimism here in our medical section. The initial shipment of vaccines got right into the arms of thousands of frontline healthcare workers in the state this week. I mean, I don't know if it's me, but I can't help but feel a bit emotional every time I see those images and videos of folks getting immunized. It's really such a feat and just incredible how far we've come this year and knowing that the end is in sight. But we need to double down on our safety protocols like health officials have begged us to do. Speaking of those officials, DHEC Interim Public Health Director Dr. Brandon Traxler gave an update Friday afternoon about celebrating the holidays safely and, of course, what the first days of the vaccine rollout looked like in our state.
That healthcare officials here in South Carolina and across the country are concerned about these devastating numbers that we could really be seeing in the coming days and weeks. Now we want to remind everyone that the safest way to celebrate the holidays is to stay home. We can't stress enough how much individual actions impact the spread of this virus. So please stay home, wear a mask if you need to be in public, physically distance yourself from others by at least 6 feet, and limit contact with those people outside your household. This week was a momentous week for our country. On Monday, states, including South Carolina, received their first doses of COVID-19 vaccine. And from Monday to Wednesday, our state received 42,900 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, and the first shots were administered into the arms of those frontline medical workers who have worked so hard and so long to take care of all of us throughout this terrible pandemic. 15 different healthcare facilities received doses directly from the federal government, and as of today, we can report that more than 7,000 frontline medical workers have been reported in the state as having received their first doses of COVID-19 vaccine. Those who can currently receive the limited doses of vaccine that are available are outlined in our phase 1A guidance. It was carefully developed based on recommendations from the CDC, as well as from South Carolina's Vaccine Advisory Committee, which helps ensure that our vaccine planning is specific to serving the South Carolina populations.
So, more than 7,000 frontline workers have already been vaccinated, and plenty more are in line. And we're going to hear more about that in a moment. But with the Moderna vaccine on the verge of being approved, Dr. Traxler discussed how both vaccines and the 200,000 to 300,000 doses the state is expected to receive by year's end will be allocated, including to long-term care facilities.
We have opted into the federal pharmacy partnership for South Carolina with long-term care facilities. So the federal government arranged a program through CVS and Walgreens, whereas those pharmacies will be administering the vaccines to the residents and staff of our long-term care facilities. We have allocated, at least at the beginning, the Moderna vaccine that we'll be receiving to that program. And we anticipate that will begin. Obviously, they still have to get their EUA, and CDC has to provide their recommendations, but we anticipate that vaccine will start being administered in South Carolina the week of December 28th.
And yes, you may have heard that some Pfizer vaccine vials have an additional dose or two above the 5 doses, and South Carolina has seen some of those too. Well, the FDA, under the emergency use authorization, is allowing partners to use those additional doses. Dr. Traxler said there have not been any adverse reactions reported by any of those frontline workers immunized. And just so we can all keep track of how many immunizations have taken place in the state and how many doses we're getting, DHEC said that they will be displaying vaccine data by the beginning of January so we can all keep track. So stay tuned for that on DHEC's website. And we got even more encouraging news. I know we had that really depressing business section, but I want to keep it going with this good news about the vaccine. I was on a call with some frontline workers from Prisma Health to talk about how the rollout is going amid our worst surge to date. And there is plenty of excitement and relief among those on the front line regarding the vaccine. But doctors told me emergency rooms are filling up and deaths are increasing, and we haven't seen the worst of it yet. Dr. Helmut Albrecht is the director of the Center of Infectious Disease Research and Policy at Prisma Health and USC. He gave a historical perspective on the news and what two things we can credit for longer life expectancy over the past century.
It's an incredible day, right? The day is here where the vaccines are incredible, but giving them is going to make the difference. So it'll take a village, and Prisma Health has a very functional village and has given out their vaccines. So I'm an infectious disease doctor. I can tell you that life expectancy in the last 100 years has doubled. And there's only two things that have done this: clean water and vaccines. It's just so incredibly important going forward with this. This is not going to replace all the other things we're doing. This will work in tandem with those.
That's right. Clean water and immunizations have doubled our life expectancy over the past 100 years. Noted. Tell your friends and all those amateur epidemiologists out there. Stephanie Brown is also on the front line of the pandemic at Prisma Health in Columbia. She's an intensive care unit nurse and has witnessed the devastation firsthand. But the vaccine is giving her hope.
I have had a lot of COVID patients, and the families are devastated. The patients are devastated. It is a great responsibility to take care of them, but with it is a great reward. And being able to get the vaccine is very special to me. It will enable me to help take care of my patients better. I just feel like it's the right thing for me to do. I'm not so special that I should wait to see how it works out for everybody else. Everybody needs to step up and do their part. And I just feel like I'm stepping up and doing my part. That's all.
I love that part at the end there where she's talking about how she's stepping up. That's what a hero looks like, folks. And we need them now more than ever. Just listen to Dr. Albrecht talk about the current surge.
Well, obviously, we haven't learned enough. So we're getting another surge, and it's a predictable next event is going to be the Christmas holidays, where people are getting together. So we have not learned enough to get this under control. For me, control, the best marker is probably what percentage of tests are positive. Clearly less than 5%. Good control is 1%. We're above 20%. So we're nowhere close to control. And it's with a delay of a week, we'll see it in the hospitals. And with a delay of a month, we'll see it in mortality. So there's still a long way to go. And we will see another uptick. The vaccine actually is a little bit of a double-edged sword in that, because that lets some people take their guard down. We need to get as many people healthy to this vaccine as we can. So this is the time to not drop all your precautions, but to actually really pull it together and do the right thing until it's your time to get the vaccine. And even after that, until we've really beaten this, to do the right thing. And it's very obvious from the current surge numbers that we're nowhere close to where we need to be. So let's all do a little better.
The takeaway there, folks, do better. And as we go, at the time of our taping, the Moderna vaccine emergency use authorization had not been approved by the FDA, though it is expected shortly, like how the Pfizer vaccine was last Friday. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the United States may ship 7.9 million vaccine doses to states next week if the Moderna vaccine is approved. That would include 5.9 million doses of Moderna's vaccine, according to CNN. Welcome to our wind down section, our little break from the news. We want to know how you are celebrating. I know it's going to look different this year. It's supposed to. That's how it's got to be. But, you know, we're looking ahead to the Christmas holiday. We just wrapped up Hanukkah, and New Year's is right around the corner. So, you know, leave us a voicemail. We want to hear about how all these holidays are affecting you, what you're doing, how you're doing it differently, and of course, what your resolutions are. You know, we all got them. Did anyone accomplish any this year? Tell us. 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and just a little bit about what's going on. We would love to include it in our nice little wind down report, wind down pod next week. 803-563-7169. So, AT, I hear we have one voicemail from a dear colleague of ours.
Oh, yeah, man. We have some other voicemails, too, but when a colleague calls in, they jump the line.
Mm-hmm.
So I apologize to everyone else. I don't think vaccines should work that way, but voicemails, they do. So we got a call in from a familiar voice, if anyone here is a huge public radio fan in the state. So let's roll it.
Hey, guys. It's Vince Cole Blugo, your colleague. And, you know, hey, just want to see how you guys are. We don't really see each other much. Let's see, what am I doing lately with my COVID time? I just finished the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Watched that. Finished it this morning. It's Thursday. It's about 7:45. And, yeah, I probably shed a tear at the very end when Frodo gets on the boat and leaves across the sea. Other than that, I thought I'd share my COVID experience with you guys right now. It's pretty quick. If you guys haven't heard me on the radio in the last couple of days, it's because I'm at home quarantining because I learned I was in close contact with somebody who had tested positive for COVID-19. Now, I learned that this happened last Thursday. That was December 10th, so it's about 7 days ago. And it's been 7 days. I'm not feeling any symptoms. I'm not experiencing anything outside of the ordinary, no illness, no nothing. And I don't know if that's because, I guess, when I was in close contact with this person, I was wearing a mask. I don't know. I had a mask on the whole time. Been wearing them pretty regularly up at work. And I don't know. 7 days since that incident and feel fine. No sickness. No nothing. Just my little anecdote about this whole COVID-19 2020 stuff. Hope to see you guys soon in the office again. Other than that, take care. And I have two cats. One is 11 pounds. The other is 16 pounds. Bye.
Thank you, Vince, for letting us know your the weights of your cats, your feline friends. We are glad to hear that you're still negative and that you're doing well. That's great to hear. Yeah. We do miss your voice on the radio. I'm assuming that's why you called in to us, so people could hear your voice so they could get that fixed.
He was so thirsty to get that voice out there.
He's just missing it. He's like, people need to hear it.
It's like milk and audible milk and honey. Yeah. Oh, man, Vince.
Vince Colblugo.
Oh, Vince Colblugo.
Vince Colblugo.
I've told him numerous times, pick one of those names and go with it. But yeah, no, man. he forges on with the two.
Yeah, he's really leaning into his public radio name. It's like if I went by Gavin Sullivan Jackson reporting from Columbia.
I think it would be like if your name was G. Sullivan Jackson.
Is that G. Sullivan J?
Is that G. Sullivan Jackson?
Maybe in 2021, I'll rebrand.
Oh, you definitely should. You got the mustache. You got to have a name
to go
with it.
I have the property.
Uh-huh. You do. Vince, I understand why you would cry at the end of Lord of the Rings. It's very sad when Frodo goes off with Gandalf into the West. No spoilers, but it happens. It's a very moving tale. One of the five endings at the end of that movie.
Okay. All right.
Ends in 45 minutes.
I was told that we have a hard five for our wind down section, which is some lingo.
Tight five.
Take it or leave it, folks.
Take it or leave it, folks.
Okay. And here I am taking time to explain the tight hard five.
Yeah. Oh, God. This is already going over.
Precious seconds.
So, Gavin, you have two parts of adult news.
We're going to speak at the same time.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do this whole time.
This is how a tight five works, folks.
Gavin, I'm going to throw it to you. Take it away, bud.
I'm going to be on the left channel. You'll be on the right channel.
Yeah, I'll pan 100% each way.
So, yeah, you're right. I have two adult bad news items. I know it's been a while, but I figured it happens. You get to talk about it. I got to spend part of my day on Thursday buying a new tire. It was just time to buy a tire. So I bought myself a Christmas present.
Super lame.
New tire.
Present.
Awesome.
That's
everyone loves
news.
That. And just and a new oil change, which I needed. I love it. My little Passat. But then the other night, also on Thursday, I guess it was a big day on Thursday. I had to sleep on my back, which I'm not a back sleeper. I'm a side sleeper.
No. Back sleepers are the worst. My wife is one. Sorry, babe.
I would love to sleep on my back because it's better for your face, but it's hard to do.
Speaking of faces.
Speaking of faces, the reason I was doing this is because I got some fresh Botox in the old mug, and I didn't want to sleep on my side and like mess anything up. So because I did that on Thursday. Thursday was a big day for me, folks. Got a lot of things checked off. So
I've seen a lot of people who I know have gotten Botox say they're not there. You can't know what's in the vaccine. And I'm like, guys, come on.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No. Well, I mean, the Botox is done like under such lock and key. Like the amount of botulism, whatever it is they take to make it into a vaccine is like so tiny. But they use like maybe a gram of it a year to make millions of vials of it. You know, it's not even a gram. I don't think it's even that
much.
Let's
get the vaccine.
Like so tiny. But yeah, get the vaccine, folks. Calm down.
Your skin's looking nice and tight though, Gab.
Yeah, no more crow's feet, fools.
my beautiful Lebanese skin, she don't crack, baby. So
yeah, you got that. We're going trying to make it to 80 like Fauci, baby.
Fauci, he trying looks to get so good 10,000 at
80 miles on this mug.
Talk about a tight five. He's a tight 10 at 80, baby.
Hey. keep this tight five going, AT. What do you have?
Oh, yeah. What do I have to talk about?
Tell me, AT, what's going on in your world, man?
All right, AT, let's start with you. I watched Taxi Driver for the first time. I feel like a grown up watching this movie. De Niro, Scorsese. It was pretty good. I've never seen it.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I had never watched it. I decided I was like, hey, it's there. I'm alone, very alone. So I can,
okay,
I can
move
relate.
On.
I can relate. A lot of the movie is about this man who is just terminally alone.
Oh.
It was a really great movie. It was a great character piece, but it did suffer at me as just a pure hyperactive child of the 80s. The pacing in these old movies are tough sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was good. It didn't suffer too bad from that. Taxi Driver, watch it.
Yeah, okay, I'll do it because
I think that was a tight five. Let's see. Ooh, we're at 8 minutes. Take it out, bud.
Just as you called it.
I said a tight five from us is a easy breezy 8.5.
Loose 8. Well, folks, it's been a year. Thanks for listening to the pod. And like we kind of talked about, we're going to have a little special one for you, a 100th celebration, if you will.
100th episode. We're in our 99th episode right now, currently, the end of the 99th episode. So
which
you're
is why
get...
I needed Botox. I was starting to look at, you know, I was like, ah!
You were looking every single one of those 100 pandemic. But this is not 100 episodes of Lead. This is 100 pandemic episodes.
Yeah. We did 100 episodes in our first 2 years. And now we've done 100
since March.
Yeah, since March.
Yeah, garbage. Absolutely garbage. Oof.
So,
and you
thank
animals
you.
Want more. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. We couldn't do it without you. So, show us your appreciation by leaving a review, sending us a holiday present, 1041 George Rogers Boulevard. I wear a large.
You know, Gavin likes, you know, he likes them Tiffany boxes.
Yes, give me something. That's just that, or a voicemail will do, folks. You don't think that's not the reason for this season. 803-563-7169. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. But if you really want to get us a present, become an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Okay, I'll start.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'll start first.
No, let me go. You shut up, let me go. No, me, then you.
This is definitely an example of our tight five. It's been 5 minutes.